Ladies and gentlemen, people of the world, wherever you are, today is a very exciting day. We've talked about him on the show a handful of times. I would consider him part of the lore of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise at home, in your car, wherever, for the one only Carrot Top.
Oh, hello, everybody. Yeah. Hi. I like that you know, if you mentioned me before. Was it all good?
It was.
It worries you, right?
No.
Oh, we talk about it all the time.
It was, but I will say, some people's entry point to you was your wardrobe malfunction on TikTok. Do you remember this?
Oh, God. No. Oh, God. Was it like my wiener?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like bouncing around?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good introduction.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's a bad introduction.
Now they know you're working.
Yeah, I can add work. I mean, right. It's kind of hard to tune away now. I mean,
yeah.
You capture them at that moment.
They have to buy a ticket.
Yeah, and I'm an idiot. I don't even know. I'm going to dance around my house, and like my friend's like, did you see what you posted? And I'm like, what? I'm like, your dick is like, and like, then I went back and looked. I'm like, oh man, that it is. Wow.
Oh, I respect you for just looking at that and then carrying on.
I just thought, yeah, why not? You know?
Yeah. Well, hell yeah, man.
Thank God I have a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank God.
Because right then it'd be like, oh, you see him bounce around the town.
Yeah,
it's like this little no.
Yeah, yeah.
So how many times do you watch it a day?
I mean,
what's up, guys? This is the TMT podcast. This is today's free episode. If you want this episode ad free and an extra bonus episode, you can find that right now on our website.
The mystery of the flying saucers may soon be solved.
If you've ever smoked weed at literal Woodstock, you're not a stoner. Goodbye.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I'm gay as fuck.
I'm trying to get my arse eaten.
The so-called flying saucers.
Science. Fashion your seatbelt and get ready for debate.
I actually have a super this is very random because two things. One, my mom would always reference your movie Chairman of the Board.
Okay.
But she'd always do the B-O-R-E-D, and she would use that to roast my dad. So if my dad was telling a boring story, she'd just call it out.
Yeah, Chairman of the Board.
Yeah, she'd go, Chairman of the Board.
Yeah.
And she'd laugh at him.
Yeah, we did that on the set, I think. I mean, yeah. We were kind of privy to it. I mean, first day, I think, we said, it's Chairman of the Board, as in board, not board, you know.
Yeah.
Because, filming a movie for 2 months.
Yeah.
But it was a fun experience. And, of course, you know, you're ready to get all the crap, you know, because you're Carrot Top and you're film. So it wasn't like I was shocked they were going to rip me apart.
Yeah. When did you make that film? How many years ago now?
God, I don't even remember. 90-something.
Yeah. Something.
90.
Yeah, it was a minute ago. Do you remember how old you were when you made it?
20-something. 20-something. Late 20s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so I
didn't know what I was doing. I had no clue. Like, literally. I even told them that.
Yeah.
That I didn't. And they're like, oh, you know, ready, set, and I'm like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. And they're like, yeah, you're good. And action. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. And they just, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and it turned out okay because we, you know, the more we got into it, the more you took, you know, because I do stand up. So stand up is way different than movies in every aspect of it. And, Larry Miller was a brilliant comic that was on one of the cast members. And he took me aside one day. We were watching the dailies. And he says, you want to see, can I give you a little tip? And I said, please give me anything. And he brought me in and he said, you see how when you're doing this, let me show you this scene we did today. So he did something with his eyebrow. He by moving his eyebrow, got the laugh. It was the punchline by watching that little one move, as opposed to me, you know, jumping around and trying to, but then again, there was always props. And so I was part of it. I had to be kind of bigger than life, silly, because I'm jumping around with big props and surfboards and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But the actual scenes where you had to be serious, I learned a lot. Like this scene with Jack Warden. I mean, it was kind of a cool scene.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for all the, you know, whatever shit people used to give you, you did a lot of crazy
things.
It was, it's awesome. Actually, the scene where the woman flushes the toilet.
Yes.
So it's funny because my cousins, they showed me this movie. I think I was maybe like 6 or 7. We were all about the same age. And they love the movie. They're like, you got to watch Chamber of the Board. So we watched Chamber of the Board. And that scene, for some reason, was like stamped in my mind.
Right.
And I'm not exaggerating, for the rest of my life, I've always had this thought that while I'm taking a shower, someone's going to storm the bathroom and flush the toilet and turn the water cold.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, that's the impact.
Oh, good. I'm good.
My life is this permanent fear in the shower, dude.
Yeah. It was fun movie making. I mean, you know, I go back and look, I actually got some of it running now. You see the little props that came up, but then it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've been in the game a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it over 30 years at this point?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 39?
39. Oh, my 39. God. I'm coming up on 40. That's
coming
incredible.
Coming up on 40, yeah. Next year will be 40 years.
Now. Yeah.
40 years.
Do you remember?
I'm the veteran now.
Yeah.
The veteran old guy.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess when you think about it, when you're not, it's cool to be the young kid that wants to ask the old guy. Yeah. Now I'm the old guy that young people, you know, young kids want to say, what's your take on this? And so it's fun to be the diverse roles.
Yeah.
I still feel like a child.
Yeah.
But I've, done it.
Do you remember, like, just for the people listening that aren't familiar, like, with your entire career, do you remember, like, one of your first performances ever? Like, could you retell that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was at the Ratskeller in the college, like library. They had this little room off to the side, and I said, you know, they had served beer at night, and there was a little stage, and I said, you know, is it cool if I go up there and do comedy? And they said, great, do you know how to do it? I said, I don't know how to do it, but you know, if you mind doing it. So I just went up there and just started telling jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, like George Carlin jokes and Richard Pryor jokes, and you know, jokes that had been set before, not my stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just the comfort of doing it and people laughing that I said, I really like this. And then a couple more times came by, and they said, they would ask me, actually, hey, do you want to, on Wednesdays, you want to make that like comedy night? So I said, sure. So every Wednesday I would have comedy. Then it started becoming a little more popular, and all the kids would come and drink beers, and I'd put on a little show. And then it would start to slowly progress into my own material after doing all those jokes. And so I started thinking of a way to come up with my own jokes. So my first prop was a neighborhood crime watch sign.
Okay.
And I'd stolen it, and it was on my dorm. So I just ripped it off my dorm. I walked in, I said, sorry, I'm late. I was in the neighborhood, and I held up the sign. And I said, how good is our crime watch if I'm watching the signs? And everybody laughed, and it was like, well, this is clever and funny. And you know, it's kind of raw, you stole the sign. So there's a lot of elements that made it funny.
Yeah.
And it was smart, you know, it's like smart, like how good is our crime watch? And so then I started thinking, I need to have more signs, maybe, like think of the. So I went through the city of Boca, and I literally said, that's a funny sign too, because it was about a train horn. I said, no train horn between these hours. And I'm like, that's the hours you need the train horn, because you can't see the train, you need to hear it. And so I pulled that one down, and then I took, there was a main, the main road that went through Boca Raton was called Butts Road.
Yeah.
So I said, you got to get that one. And just say, this is where all the assholes live.
Yeah.
So nice. It was just starting to become a little, a sign bit, you know, and I had all these, and like 15 different signs, the slow children at play. Yeah. If you looked at the sign to this day, they have a stick figure with no feet. I said, no wonder they're slow. They don't have any feet. It was all stuff people had seen, you know, they're like, oh, that's funny. I see that sign every day. I never put those two and two together.
Yeah.
So it's kind of coming up with the things that were, and people that influenced me in comedy were like people that wrote, like George Carlin would kind of come up with that, or Gallagher, like a gag where we'd see, but was also clever. Like you can make yourself, not like just holding up this coffee cup. It would have to be something that would be, you know, the cup would have to do something.
Was it, you know, I mean, I'm sure that was a pretty crazy moment to be acknowledged by Carlin. Because didn't, you know, like if you're saying in college, you say his material is like, you know,
right,
just to give it a shot. And then you eventually, you know, his name comes out of his face. I mean, that must have been insane for you.
I show it in my show every night. I do a thing about being influenced in my life, and it was a tradition. My friends would always sit on a couch just like this,
yeah,
and we'd watch the HBO special every time it aired.
Yeah,
and so my buddies would all sit down, and we'd hit play, and we'd watch the George Carlin special, and then sure enough, we're just watching it, and he says, you know, who packed your bags? And he says, you didn't pack your bags. He says, no, Carrot Top packed my bags. And I'm sitting on my couch, my friend's like, what the, right? The only one with a boner, you know? So I'm like, sorry, fellas, I had no idea.
Big boner,
that.
Let's make that clear.
Well, back
huge
then,
boner.
Back then, that's right. Everyone knows about it now, so I can't lie. What?
Yeah.
It was everywhere.
Yeah.
So that was, it's still, when I watch it nightly, it's still exciting because it's like George Carlin, you know, saying your name.
Yeah.
You know, when you first get into the business, you know, you're watching him and thinking about people like that are mentors, and you get he says your name. It's a cool moment because, and everyone, you know, would lie if they said they didn't get excited that their mentor mentioned their name. So
you're in Florida, you're working signs, you're coming up with material. And at the time, what are you studying?
Marketing. You got a degree in marketing and then went into comedy, which is the normal thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I finished my marketing degree and then pursued the comedy thing. And then I got out of it because I couldn't get enough gigs together. So I started shucking oysters and doing, guessing people's weight at the fair and just gigs. And then one day, which I find to be really kind of cool, a story where I was shucking oysters, and this couple came in. These two couples, and I was doing my normal, you know, I would have the jukebox on. That's how old I am. It was a jukebox.
Yeah.
Plays music.
Yeah.
And I would dance around the bar, you know, like Mick Jagger and Steven Tyler, because the music was on while I'm shucking the oysters and just kind of making people laugh. And this couple just like staring at me, like, God, you look just like this comedian. You must have a twin. I kept hearing him say. I said, you know, God forbid I have a twin. And they said, no, there's a guy, I swear to God, you have a twin. And what did he go by, Carrot Top? And the guy's like, yeah, Carrot Top or something. This guy's like, awesome. We just saw him in Tampa. And I'm thinking, oh, well, really? And they go, man, you look just like him. I mean, it's weird, like the mannerisms and the everything. And I said, yeah, never, I'll look him up. And then... And I went and tried to pursue it again. Oh. If those people had kind of come in and said that, I probably would never try to come in again. So they came in and they had seen me and said there was great. So something there.
That's crazy.
So I went back and tried to get some gigs together. And then of course, I didn't stop and went back for till now.
Now, is Wikipedia lying to me, or like your parents were NASA?
My father was.
Your dad worked for NASA.
My father worked at NASA. Yeah, that's why when you hear Houston, we have a problem. You hear Larry right after that.
Yeah, and they're referring to your dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
I worked at NASA and trained astronauts. You know, I didn't even think anything of it when you're a kid. You just think your dad's a nerd and he's going to go to work.
Of course.
And you know, he said, you want to go to a launch? I'm like, no, I don't want to go to a launch. I want to watch Brady Bunch. So he'd drag me down to the Space Center and, you know, watch launches all the time. And one in particular was, I think it was 13. And my dad says, we're going to this launch. And I was like, oh, man. So I go down there. I mean, you're going to meet Bob Crippen and John Young. I mean, these are going up in the space shuttle. It was a big deal. And so I said, you know, I don't care. And they had two tents, and they had a tent for like hot dogs and Cokes and sodas and whatnot. And they had a beer tent. So my dad says, what do you want? What do you want? I said, I don't know, just a Coke and a hot dog. And my dad says, looked at the line. A beer line was so long, and the Coke line was three times his line. So my dad says, you're drinking a fucking beer. And I swear to God. So I was like, I am? He's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. Don't tell your mom, but I'm not waiting that fucking Coke beer.
Wow.
Line. You're going to get a beer. You're going to drink it. It's fine. So I remember he gave me the beer, and I remember watching the launch, and I think I saw three launches.
You know,
because I was so loopy.
Yeah.
And my dad kept, you know, are you okay? I was like, no, I don't like this stuff. It's not very good. And I get home, and my mom's like, how was the launch? I'm like, I think it was great. I got drunk. And my dad's like, what did you didn't get drunk? You know? Now I threw my dad on the bus. You're not supposed to tell your mom you had beer.
Wow.
So, So that's my first beer at a launch at NASA.
Dude, that's one of one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
But it was a cool, you know, growing up with my dad working at, you know, and I think that's where I probably got some of my creative you know, side of me from my father being an engineer and being creative, and he has to make, you know, all this. He made things at NASA that were like instrumental to that still work today. The clamps that hold the 747 onto the shuttle,
yeah,
so they could transport it from California to.
Oh,
he made
cool.
the little clamp to hold it that released it too. So
yeah,
it was amazing. I remember him stressing over that. One day yeah. at work at home, I said, "What are you making?" And I got to make this goddamn clamp, or this—it's got to be, you know, heavy enough and holding up the shuttle, and it's got to release off the shuttle off the 747. I'm like, "I'm just making spaghetti. If you want to come help me, yeah. I'm making some noodles."
So, that's awesome, man.
You know.
So you grew up with a space engineer,
yeah,
and then
my mom was the fun one. She had a tennis shop, and so I played tennis, and she had the more free spirit, and so it was fun.
Yeah. So then fast forward again to the oyster shucking couple.
Yeah.
So they give you the spark, you get back in it.
Yeah.
Was it like, you're performing, I'm assuming you're touring. Was it like a TV spot that really kind of blew everything up, or did it kind of?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have an interesting kind of story with my career, because a lot of people get like a show and then, or like a, then they, you know, become, you know, that way. I always did it, they call it grassroots in a sense, where there's a lot of bands that do this. They just, they're touring bands and they're grassroots marketing, and it's, they just hit the country worldwide, and they didn't particularly do a TV show or even have a hit on the radio, but they're popular. So I was kind of in the sense, part that, part not. I was hitting so many college campuses and doing all these colleges. I'd do like two a day.
Yeah.
That
two a day?
Yeah, two a Jeez. Day. One in the morning at their cafeteria, and then one at their evening at their night at their like arena.
Wow.
And then the next morning go to the next college. I'm like Notre Dame and, you know, UCLA and Ohio State, and you name the guy, every college I probably hit twice. So I had this kind of cult following in a sense with the college kids, and I mean, we'd go to the towns, their college, it would be like jam packed. And then I would get a call and say, "Hey, you want to do Regis and Kathy Lee, or the Tonight Show?" So I would go on Regis and Kathy Lee, which is like 90 year old ladies.
Yeah,
and I would do my show, and then they loved it. And then the people, college kids, would be like, "Well, we saw him at our college." And then I'd do the Tonight Show, and that'd be more like middle America.
Yeah.
So I was kind of hitting, and then I had a show on the Cartoon Network. So I was kind of hitting every demographic. Almost at the same time, where people are like, "Oh, I saw him at my college. Oh, I saw him on the Tonight Show. Oh, I saw him on an AT&T commercial." So it became kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
It,
so you
one built- particular show, I think, really made me go. It was all the combination of all those shows happening at the same time.
It was just that momentum that you were building.
Right. It wasn't a particular sitcom or a show that I, you know, I mean, doing the Tonight Shows and all those other shows were very helpful, because they're late night shows, and back then they had a lot of big ratings.
Yeah, I would argue that's essentially what people are doing, the same thing now. It's just like, you know, the internet exposes you to a lot of young people.
Sure, absolutely.
It's funny because I was, you know, just, you know, watching some interviews you had done, and I pull up two comments that I thought were funny, and some were cool, but this one. You know, this guy came to my college campus back in 1994 and was the funniest comic I've ever seen. He blew everyone away. And when I would go through the comments, this was a Rogan clip, but that, like, there's 4,000 comments there, and a lot of them are recounting like you coming to their college.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I thought it was pretty like amazing how many people remembered you, and they had very like detailed stories, like, "Oh, I was here," and
"Oh, wow,
yeah, that's yeah."
Cool. And it's so, usually because they're all plastered drunk. I don't know if they remembered. That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember anything.
One I thought was kind of interesting. I'm on my fifth Carrot Top video, and I'm starting to really like this guy. So it took five videos.
Oh, it took five. Okay.
Yeah, it took five.
It's all right. Yeah. Take your time.
Yeah. He really got the shit of it his whole career, and he's still in there. If there's ever going to be an advocate for victims of bullying, it will be Carrot Top.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the part I thought was super interesting. If he was ever put into war, he'd be the guy you want in your platoon. He would have many skills to think of ways to fool the enemy, and he'd be so loyal to those who had his back.
All right.
I thought that was a roundabout way of just trying to pay you a compliment.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess they're thinking that I would have some maneuver some way with some prop or something to protect us and go at the enemy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that would happen. And
yeah, after
I was
five
in combat,
videos.
I would be. Yeah, after 5 years of him trying to love me.
Yeah.
See, I would probably protect you if you liked me the first time around.
Yeah.
But since it took five times, yeah. You're not in my platoon.
Yeah, I guess five battles then it would take.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for you to be on his, you know, his favorite list. But yeah, man, I thought it was interesting how you kind of called out in your career, you know, when people would give you flack or whatever, you know, you would finish doing a big show and then you'd see someone giving you shit.
Yeah.
And you'd like wrestling with that juxtaposition. I think, I would say a lot of people, I think in entertainment now, I don't know, it maybe you feel differently, but when I hear you speak about these things, I almost feel that you were charting a lot of waters that I think people experience now, where when someone gets kind of well-known on the internet, not for a huge dong, but maybe for something else, you know, they get this weird like imposter syndrome. And I'll talk to people and they'll be like, oh, I put something out and a lot of people like it, but I see people making fun of it. Or I see people, you know, in disagreement with it. I guess like as a young guy going through that, what were those moments like where you kind of had to block that out and keep doing your thing?
Yeah, that's exactly kind of what I did.
Yeah.
I would go back as something as silly as consider the source, you know?
I remember saying that.
But I would just think, wait a minute, I was talking to George Carlin yesterday, mm-hmm. and he was telling me how funny I am. And then I've got this Yahoo on some internet site saying that I'm a piece of junk and worthless and a hack and whatever.
Yeah.
And not funny and just whatever. And I'd say, you had to wait to find to block that out and just go think of the George Carlin.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you did, you know?
Yeah.
Thank God I had so many positive people over the negatives. Because you know what? That's usually another thing too. Like, I've got a lot of love. I mean, that's why I'm still doing this so long.
Yeah.
And we have the show and we're still jamming out the show. So it's like, if no one was coming to the shows anymore and it was not getting, then I would start thinking, oh, maybe they're right.
Yeah.
But it's still jamming and you're still doing it. And so I've always kind of just kept to my own thing. I always thought, even way, way back when I was young, I would say, I'm not going to worry about other comics, you know, what they're doing because I have to do my act anyhow. So everything I did, and my act was something I thought of, and I never even stopped once to think what the other guy was doing. I barely ever watched other comics because I was preparing to do mine.
Yeah.
And if I did see a comic that was funny, I would say, God, fuck, that was funny. And I had many, many friends. We're thousands of friends that are comics that we're like best of friends, and we all dig each other's act, and everyone's different styles, and that's what makes it funny. I mean, sitting in a room with a lunch table with all comics is... it's priceless. I mean, everyone's got their own little shtick and their mood and their thing, and everyone makes you laugh. And, but that's how you go through it. Yeah, you take all the love and you don't worry. You filter out the other. You got to filter out the hate.
Yeah,
because there's always gonna be that.
Yeah,
know? No one. You know, if everyone loved Carrot Top, it wouldn't be any fun. You gotta have to have a little bit of.
Yeah,
but there's more love than there's hate. You know?
Yeah, I was gonna say
I have a joke where a joke doesn't do well, and it's kind of meant to be.
Yeah,
just so I can do it's like a Carson-ish kind of thing.
Yeah,
just so when the joke bombs, I can do this kind of look, and I do this thing. But everybody always says the funniest part of the show is when joke doesn't work and you do this thing. I said, yeah, because I only do it like twice.
Yeah,
but the whole show is that. It's not funny.
Yeah,
so the
yeah.
show has to be funny. And then you have that one moment or two where you kind of, you know, dig on yourself for not joke not working.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the most should work.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I think at a point it's probably I wouldn't say easy, but it's reasonable that if you're continuously getting a lot of love, you can, as a person, you can convince yourself, you know, I can trust this and I don't have to listen to this other stuff. And I mean, if people keep showing up to see you, how right can the people be who are always trying to take a chunk out of you? They almost need you there.
Right.
You know? I just think you're the length of your career is like, it's fucking awesome, man. It's just super impressive.
The length of my penis too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's not forget.
Don't go back to that again, but I'm sorry. I had to.
I have it on loop, so it's hard for me to get it out of my mind.
You know? We all do.
Yeah.
No, we all do.
Yeah, dude.
ICP.
It seems like you still love it, though.
My penis?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love, absolutely, I love this job more than anything in the world. And I find it to be, because everyone says to me, like, dude, when are you going to retire? And when are you, like, you still having fun? And I don't know how, I have more fun now than I, and I don't know the exact one that I maybe just, one day you realize you just kind of got into a rhythm and you kind of know what you're doing, so you feel a little better.
Yeah.
Because I did tell George Carlin that one time. I asked him, as an idiot, I didn't know what is. I just said, what's it like to be you where you got it all, like you got it?
Yeah.
And he said, what are you talking about? I said, you know, you're like, you're George Carlin. You don't go up there and like eat shit. You're like, you kill it every night because you're a polished pro. It must be nice to have that feeling when you go up there that you're just going to nail it again. And he said, I don't know. I'm still learning every day. I even know what you're talking about. So part of me, I think he meant, you know, he's just a perfectionist, but I think it probably is nice to have I do go up there now with a pretty good, I know I have my flow and my outline of where I'm going to go and what's going to, you don't bomb anymore because you can't. It's kind of bomb-proof. Yeah. So you know how to do the show. How to take every crowd and beginning to end.
Yeah,
you might have one that just, you know, last week we had one that the crowd wasn't so hot, but we made fun of the fact that the crowd wasn't so hot. And then the crowd was great. Like, you just had to work them around. You know? You got to take a 2 to a 10.
Yeah.
Just don't take a 10 to a 2.
Yes.
That's what you don't want to do.
Yeah.
God, they were so good, and then I fucked it up kind of thing, yeah.
Oh man, I was gonna do it again. I'm like very familiar taking a 2 to a 10. But
you can do it.
Yeah. All right. That's so how many days a week do you perform now?
Six.
Yeah.
My manager has a car payment, so I have to work.
Yeah,
we gotta make sure.
Yeah, Ferraris, man, they don't pay themselves.
Nice. I'm not a Ferrari guy.
No.
I'm a pickup truck guy. I'm a trucker hat, and this is me dressed up, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. You make your clothes, though.
I like to look homeless so people don't ask me for money. Like, that guy's broke.
It's a good strategy.
Yeah, they never ask me. That guy doesn't have a fucking dime. Don't ask him.
Yeah, no strangers and no family. They won't ever come after you.
Yeah. If you dress broke, no one will ask you for anything.
Yeah. But you make your clothes. Is that right?
I do. I mean, almost everything I kind of, if I don't make full of it, I will add to or do something. Like, I'll add the patch on the front, or I'll add this, or add something, some paint, and do something to it. Yeah. Just kind of make it mine.
Yeah. I think it's cool, man. Mm. So you're doing 6 nights a week. And I'm sure this, you know, and I'm partially digging into this because, again, I want everyone listening to this to kind of get the full scope of you. And you've been doing that how many years now, roughly?
At the Luxor and Vegas and stuff. About 30-something years.
Okay. So 30-some. And is Jeff Dunham still performing out there or no?
I think he comes in and out.
In and out.
And he does it, but he's not there full time, I don't believe. There's so many shows that have, you know, that's another thing that's changed with Vegas. You know, when I first started.
That's what I wanted to ask you is how has, like, I guess, because I would imagine in the crowds you would see a change or like, you know, what was it like when you first started and what do they feel like now?
It's completely different, I'll tell you. I mean, they're still awesome audiences, but.
Yeah.
The times have changed and the things and the number of shows. And like, it sounds weird though. Like when I started there, it was before MGM Grand was built. So there was like, there's no New York. There was no Bellagio. There's no Wynn. There's no Encore.
Yeah.
So there was, you know, Caesars, Bally's, like a few other ones, and that was it. So there, on any given night, there was probably a dozen shows, a dozen showrooms. And now there's 100 showrooms, maybe.
Yeah.
So, everything in that aspect has changed too, just the growth and the number of shows that are there and the kind of shows that are there. You know, when I was there too, when I first started, they were like Vegas. And like, then that's where you go to like, you know, retire, you know? And I said, no, that's Branson, bitch. It's not Vegas. So Branson's where you, not,
yeah, not off,
but
forever.
Not Vegas. You know. So I said, Vegas is not that. What are you talking about? And they said, yeah, Vegas is like, you know, Wayne Newton and that. But I kept thinking, I know, but I still thought it was a cool aspect to it. And then all of a sudden, I mean, within the last 10 years, it was like Elton John. Well, Celine was probably the first one that made a big, Celine Dion came. And that was huge.
Yeah.
And we had a joke, when she's working, she's Celine Dion, and she's not, she's Celine Dioff.
Yeah.
But she had this big thing, And then they got Elton John, and they got Rod Stewart, and they got the Rolling Stones, and then the Eagles, and Kiss. And then all of a sudden, everyone wants to play Vegas.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you go there, I'll be back there today. You go be flying, and then you got everyone from Usher to, you know, Katy Perry to, I mean, everyone.
Yeah.
So literally. It went from, you know, no one wanting to play Vegas to being kind of I need to play Vegas.
Wow. Did you have feelings about that? Like, because you were one of the first
I stayed through thick and thin. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I always had a feeling like from the beginning, I thought it was a great gig. I mean, you're in Vegas and you're not just the aspect of idea of not traveling was also nice as well. Yeah. You know, you'd stay in your, instead of getting on a bus in a hotel, you stay in your own room.
Yeah.
Do a show and you go home.
Yeah.
That's very rare in the show business to do that. So,
You know, how many bus tours do you think you've done in your career?
Oh my God. Thousands. I mean, that's all I did. I turned down the Vegas gig in the beginning because I was a bus guy.
Yeah.
And they kept asking me if I'd do the residency. And I said, no. And the guy finally came back and said, you know, let's rethink this. You sure? I said, no, I don't want it. And then my guy says, I think we should do it. And I'm like, well, I'll give it like a year. I'll give it a year and then I'll try it.
Yeah.
And I hated it.
Yeah.
I despised it. I'm like, I'm definitely not signing up again. So it was years over. And then all of a sudden I found a little click and it was like kind of getting good. And then I said, yeah, let's sign again. And now it's like, of course, we just signed again for 6 years. So now it's, wow. now it's a please let me sign again kind of thing. You know, I don't want to go back on the road.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I definitely cannot hold a candle to the amount of bus tours you have done. I
think but they were fun. But, you know, it's also, you're putting your life in danger, too, every night when you do that. You know, you don't even think about it. You know, you're on a tour bus in the middle of a mountain of snow, and you're letting some guy you barely know drive you around, you know. We had bus drivers one night that I'm, you know, the rest of the guys are all asleep because I'm the only one that, you know, I just did a show.
So would you sit in the front lounge?
I'd sit in the front lounge with the driver.
Wow. Every crazy.
Night. Every night. And we'd jam.
Sober?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd have my little Crown on the Rocks.
Yeah, yeah.
But not. Yeah, I never really got too crazy. I was, you know, I was kind of, I mean, I drank, but that's about the.
Yeah, none, yeah.
Unless someone put something in my drink. Then,
yeah.
I just, to have my drink and I'd sit there, we listen to like country music and just whatever and drive down the road.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to the driver and he says, you know, because he drove everybody, right? So he said, you know, and I used to drive Johnny Cash. And I said, oh my God, how'd he go from like Johnny Cash to fucking rock bottom and driving Carrot Top? I mean, he drove fucking Johnny Cash. I'm sorry about this. I'm sorry about your career ending. And he said, no, this is great. Dude, you're the best. You're like so much fun. He says, when I was driving Johnny, we'd do rails off the fucking steering wheel. And I'm literally like listening to him as he's saying this. We're driving. I'm like, how many years ago was that? And he's like, oh God, years ago. I said, but you don't anymore. Like, you know, and he's like, no. I'm like, you don't do lines anymore off the fucking bus. Like,
yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
So I could. So I'm like, let's just pull over and think this over for a minute. You know, Jesus. Make sure that you're not. Maybe we should drug test this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Bus drivers, they're an interesting breed.
Yeah. And every one of them that I had, they can, that movie, Austin Powers, when he does the thing with the little cart, he turns it around in that hallway. My bus driver, any of my bus drivers can do that in a tour bus. Because one time we were locked in, he said, hold on a second. And he did that thing that he did in Austin Powers in a bus. And we were all like, just like,
yeah.
What? How did you do that?
He does a line off the steering wheel.
I got this shit. We got it.
It does the line off the steering wheel, and he's like, that's how I get that done.
That's how you. All right, don't look that way.
Yeah.
All right, now give me a second. I'll get this out of here.
Yeah, they always have really crazy stories like that. My last driver, he was like, I guess he drove Pantera around for almost their entire career.
Wow.
Yeah. So then you take the residency.
Yeah, they're good. They're a band.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they're like party band.
Yes.
Yeah. Vinnie Paul.
Oh yeah. That's the, he didn't get too into the details, but yeah, he definitely alluded to that.
Yeah. Vinnie came to my show a lot of times. He was a big fan.
I was going to say so you're in Vegas, you sign up, now suddenly everyone wants to be there. I have to imagine you've met some very like impressive people.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. It's, and you know, it's fun. It's even fun for me. Like people say, you know, been in show business, whatever you call it. I think I'm in show business.
You're definitely in show
business. I would say I'm in some, I'm close to it if I'm not in it.
You're definitely in it.
you get to meet people. That's probably the coolest thing. You know, you're backstage and you're talking to Sting and you're, you know, you're having a, just a queen.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably the one of the pinch me moments.
Would you ever, like, do you have any rules? Like, if someone like that is in the crowd, do you want to know, or do you just let it?
That's funny you ask. I used to not want to know.
Okay.
And then now I want to know because I don't get as nervous and worked up about it as I used to.
Right.
So I would say when Sting came and Shania Twain was in the thing, I said, they told me, you know, I said, thank you, because I wanted to kind of know because I might have a bit.
Yeah.
So usually if someone comes, they're in the show regardless until they know it. And they usually are happy with it. But Shania Twain was there and I did this bit before I'd ever met her. And it's all these songs she sings. And I said, every song's like a cheerleader. And you play, there's like five or six songs, you play it. Dun, 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 dun. Let's go, girls. And then the next song is, and it's all right, let's go. So it's so funny in the show. So I said, I'm just going to, my crew's like, you know, what are you going to do with the Shania thing? Because she's there. I'm like, fucking doing it. What do you mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
That's why we do this.
Yeah.
So she's sitting right there and I do it all. And she just, and the first line out is Shania Twain, I'd hit that again. And so I get this like kind of weird laugh in the crowd, and then her husband's kind of like, after the show, she comes back and she's like, you'd hit that again? And I said, yeah, you'd hit it again. I said, yeah. And Fred's like, you can hit it again. I said, yeah. So we became friends because because I made fun of her at the show, and she just I didn't call her out either. I didn't tell anybody she was there. I just did the bit, not told her because, and she goes, you could have said it. I said, no, I wanted to let you enjoy your night. Yeah. But in the comes, we had Tony Orlando last night.
Wow.
And he does the tie, yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. So, you know, the whole, when I go into the audience to do a little crowd work, I go through and I'm like, what the fuck, Tony Orlando's here. And I play the song and we have a little piece of yellow ribbon and I fuck with the, I fuck with the crowd. And so it becomes part of the whole show.
So you embrace it now.
Queen was probably the coolest though, because Queen came back there and they were just like, you know, fuck, it's Queen, right? And it was a little nervous. I was not gonna lie, I was a little nervous, and I have some Queen in my shows. A lot of Queen songs. There's even a clip of when Freddie says "fuck you" to the crowd. I do this whole show, and then afterwards, they come back, and I'm like, oh my god, Queen's in my dressing room, and the drummer Roger says, Scott, that was just, god damn, that was funny, right? I said, oh, thanks. He says, no, that was real. How do you fucking do that? This is crazy. And Brian May stand there and he's like, they both just are like in awe, right? And it was very sweet of them. They were just like, they wouldn't stop talking. And Brian is really, he knew like every little, he said, and that thing, the part that you did with the thing, and the video came in, how did you do that? And I'm like, wow. And they go to leave and he says, I hate to do this to you, but is it okay if I come back tomorrow?
Wow.
And I said, to my show? I said, what? You don't have to come back to my show anymore. He goes, no, my son is flying in tonight, and if it's okay, I want to bring him back. I want to bring him tomorrow. And I thought, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, you know, are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah,
And he said to my assistant on the way out, he says, we'll get y'all hooked up. And I overheard him say, I got to come back and make sure this wasn't this was for real.
Wow.
He didn't believe it. The show was so good and so tight. He's like, let me see this again.
Wow.
And then he told me the next day, he says, yeah, I actually wanted to see it because I didn't believe it.
Wow.
And I was like, really? He goes, yeah, I mean, it was too good. So I'm like, okay. And then he came back and said, it's fucking bloody amazing.
Yeah.
But he, I added one like Trump thing, one thing like, and just, he knew exactly. Like, though the Trump thing was new.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Just to.
How do you do that? I always tell people, here's how to Trump. Yeah. You just got to lean up like that, right? Okay. Just be mad.
Okay.
Right? Just mad. And just, and both things, just scowl. Now you hate me, right?
Yeah.
And then just say anything is like, they don't have carpet. No one had carpeting. I made carpeting. Like, you didn't make carpet. There was never carpet. There was never chairs before I was president. I was the only president with tables. No one had tables. If you remember, they didn't. There was no tables. There was no glasses. And you're like, no, there was fun. No one sat. I did it all. You're not the first one. Yeah, I'm the first one. I am the greatest ever. You seen Carrot Top's dick? It's better than that.
Did he always talk like this? Because I feel
It seems like he became more of a caricature.
Yeah. I feel it kind of started
a caricature more. He never started out that way. Yeah. I think you're right. He just started rolling his sentences longer. Like this sort of things, you know.
I think
I did.
He honed in on his performance. He saw what people were.
Yeah,
into.
And he kind of made a caricature of himself. You know, probably. I think probably we all. I don't go back and look at my clips of me doing. I've evolved, well, hopefully evolved, not gone backwards, but changed. I mean, God, it's like listening to fingernails on a chalkboard, listening to myself and like, everybody in, an Arsenio Hall show. I'm like, here's a cup with a thing on it,
I think it's, I think the coolest thing that, I guess, that I hear just in this 40 minutes we've talked so far is it doesn't seem like at any level of career, like, anyone ever feels like I'm set, as in sort of like you always still have that part of your brain that's like, is this good? Do people like this?
Oh, I think that's probably the kiss of death for every artist, I think.
Yeah.
Because you never what the next, you can't live off the neck. The last thing you did is the next. It's like the shows. It's like, this the other night we called a road show. So what that means is, road shows are usually really rowdy and loud and fun, and you're like a rock star.
Yeah.
And Vegas shows can be, but you could also be, it could just be a show.
Well, there's a lot of tourists.
So, right. But there's been some amazing shows. There's been amazing. Shows that we've had. But the other night we had a whole, two or three in a row that were just, we come out, I said, I even said it for the show. I said, we need a road show.
Yeah.
And we came off, and first thing everybody says was, dude, roadshow. And I said, and you can't predict how and why it just happens. The crowd was just great.
Yeah.
Electric, which makes you dance more. It's weird. Like, there's a dance that you get up there with. When they're good and you're good, it's golden.
Yeah.
Every comic knows that. And in any profession, actually, you're selling cars, and you get on a roll, and you're selling cars. And I was like, God dang, I'm selling 10 cars today because I just had a rhythm.
Yeah.
So it was really just in comedy. But when you get those moments, and then you start, that's when you start thinking, nah, damn, I think I finally got this. I'm really good.
I feel like that dance is what escapes people when they watch stand-up. And I feel that, I'll talk to people or I'll see people say online, like, I don't like stand up or I don't get it, or I think stand up's kind of this. And I think people, especially young people now, they kind of see stand up in a weird way where it's just like, little clips of crowd work, and they go, oh, why do people like this? And I feel like
people, they don't know. And people tell me that, by the way, all the time. And I'm a comic.
Yeah.
They say, I hate stand up comic.
Yeah.
I always find that funny.
But then,
and I'm like, oh, geez, I'm sorry. You don't like, I hate what you do. I'm like, oh, like what, me personally, or just, no, just comedy in general. It's just, eh. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, definitely don't come to my show.
Yeah, yeah.
But people all the time, I don't like, they'd be just brutally honest. I mean, no one comes up to me and says they don't like me. But what they'll say is, I never liked you, but now I love you, like kind of thing. Seriously, they do. I get not as many times now as I used to, but a lot. I get a lot of people that they just didn't know. They just doubted. You say Carrot Top, you see me, the image, the name alone, they go, no.
Yeah.
And then they come to the show or they meet me and they're like, oh my God, this was nothing that I thought it would be. And I'm like, what did you think it would be? They go, nothing like this.
Yeah.
Because the show is way different than what anything probably that you have.
Of course.
It's... the show in Vegas is probably 70% stand-up.
Yeah.
And most people think that it's 100% all props.
Yeah.
So it started out in the beginning, it was all props and a little bit of stand-up. But now I tell stories for a half hour where I don't pick up one thing.
Yeah.
A whole story about my father working at NASA. He goes on for about 30 minutes.
And,
the evolution of comedy, about George Carlin and Gallagher and all these people. It's an actual story and people... Even last night, and they came back to stage, said, "I love all the storytelling."
Yeah,
and it just kind of evolved into that because I've been doing this for so long that I got comfortable finally just telling a story.
Yeah,
I was always so nervous just to tell a story because you wanted to have a laugh every second.
Of course.
So now it's fun to do like an 8-minute story and then get a big laugh. Yeah, but you got to wait 8 minutes for it.
Yeah.
So you're like, fucking better get, I better not mess this up because they're waiting for this big eight minute thing.
Yeah, the big payoff.
Yeah.
In the beginning, when people would kind of hit you with this, like, I thought you were this, but it was amazing. Did you appreciate that honesty, or would it mess with you a little bit?
Well, it always messed with me.
Yeah.
I told Albert Brooks one time, and he's a genius. He was on the Tonight Show, and he came out and he said he did something with something on the desk. It was like a little trick or did something, and Carson laughed. And he says, thank God that's not your whole act, because something happened to the card.
Right, right.
And Albert Brooks says to Johnny Carson, he says, God, imagine booking Carrot Top and American Airlines loses his luggage. He doesn't have shit, right? So I'm watching this on, and I remember exactly where I was. I was on a tour. We just finished doing this big, like, arena gig at a college, and it just killed. And we were watching it on TV on the bus. And I was like, what the fuck? And I was so mad. And I was so mad because of what he said was true.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if the Rolling Stones luggage was lost, they wouldn't have a fucking act.
Yeah, of course.
So it made no sense that he's ripping on me. Yeah. Of course, even if Carrot Top lost his luggage, he was fucked. Well, so if the Rolling Stones or Nirvana or anyone else anybody, if the airlines loses your shit, you're probably fucked too. But he just singled me out. So like that was bullshit. So then I get to meet him at Gary Shandling's funeral, and all places, there he is. And I said, I walked up to him, I said, I got a beef with you. And you know, Al Brooks is like, oh my God, I got to get a video of this. Carrot Top has a beef with me? I can't wait to hear. And I said, no, it's just you. And so I tell him the story, and he goes, oh my God, I am the worst person in the planet. I did do that. I did say that. And you are correct. And I said, I know I'm correct. That's what I'm telling you. Like everyone could, you know, if you lost your luggage, you wouldn't have anything. And he says, I'm sorry, can we hug it out? And he hate me hugging. He says, and then, you know, we're best friends.
Yeah.
But he says, how well did you know Gary? I said, you know, well enough that I got invited to, he didn't like people very much. And I said, no, he didn't. He says, is it kind of shocking that there's so many people here that he would hate this? I said, no, he's funny again. But I just had to set that straight with him. I'm like, why pick on me?
You took the words out of my mouth, because I was going to ask if you ever had an awkward run-in hashing it out with someone.
Oh, I've had a couple.
Yeah.
But you know, that one was, it was just, there's been a comment or two that people said that don't know the truth of it. When our buddy, a very, very funny comedian, passed away, does the clip of me and chairman of the board. He was on Conan.
Mm-hmm.
Norm MacDonald, thank you.
Yeah.
And Norm and I were great friends. Now, when I say great friends, I said we were friends. We weren't great. When he died, I said we weren't best of friends, but we were great friends. Like if I ever see him or saw him, we always say, Garen Thompson.
Yeah.
And he'd say hi, but we didn't hang out.
Yeah.
We did have coffee once in a while, actually. But he said on Conan O'Brien one night, and it's such a famous clip because he sets him up for it, and he's picking on the poor Courtney Thorne Smith, who's on the movie.
Yeah.
And it was a good movie, Chairman of the Board. He's like, God, and he's just going on and on about it. So you quit Friends, or what is it, Melrose Place?
Yeah.
You quit Melrose Place to go into movies with Carrot Top? She goes, no, I didn't quit. It was one movie, and Scott, he's the nicest guy in the world, and he's actually a great actor. And he's like, no, but go back to this. So why would you go? Why would you go do a movie with Carrot Top? And she kept trying to defend me. She's like, it was great fun. It was a great movie, and he's a sweet guy. And then he's just like, I just don't get it. And he wouldn't let it go. And then Norm MacDonald's, he says, well, what was the name of the movie again? And she says, Chairman of the Board. And he goes, oh, board, like B-O-R-E-D.
Yeah.
And Conan is, you know, losing his mind laughing. And again, I'm thinking, bitch, we did that on the set.
Yeah.
That's like, when we were making the movie, we called it Chairman of the Board.
Yeah, yeah.
But he thought that was the most fun. So everywhere I go, people say, oh my God, were you and Norm enemies? Because he really ripped on you. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
We're comics, and two, it was a fucking joke. And it was funny. Yeah. We thought it was funny enough that we wrote it too.
Yeah.
So I've only had a couple riffs with, and it's usually things that, like that one, where people heard, not the source.
Yeah.
I had another comic one time that I opened for him at a college, and they wanted me to do 20 minutes. It's at the time in my career where I had about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
So I said, and I'm not kidding you, I said, I got about eight, and they go, 8 minutes? I said, about seven's good, but I can stretch it to eight, but, you know, don't, it's not going to be honest with you. And they said, okay, they were fine with it because they didn't need to have that much time.
Right.
I said, even if you just do five, I said, five I can do, I can nail five. So I get up there and I do two proper, maybe three. Do my Crime Watch thing. I opened with the Crime Watch that I was killed. And then I go grab this car. It was like a car that was in the shape of a ramp. Mm-hmm. So if you had a head-on collision, you'd jump it, right?
Right.
And everyone kills, and I put it, yeah, this is 30 years ago. I put it down. And then I look over, and the guy's going like, you know, wrap it up. And I'm thinking, I'm like wrap it up, like close? Because I only had done less than a minute.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, like wrap. So I go to my closer, which was this paper cups and string phone.
Yeah.
And it was, had, you know, hello, what's going on? You fit, you know, the cups and string phone. I said, I made a new one for today's kids that had a call waiting in it. So I say, hold on, I have another call. Hello? And another cup would come out. And then I'd have three cups and conference calling, and I had a clear cup for caller ID. I know it's you. I can see you. Pick up. So that was my big closer, and it killed.
Yeah.
And so that's when George Carlin comes to me and says, "That's funny shit right there." So I do that, and then the comedian comes out and he whispers, "Leave your shit," because I was going to move it because I didn't want him to stand. You know, he says, "Leave your shit." So I'm. All right, so I go into the arena and I watch the whole set, and he wasn't doing well, and he was in a bad mood, and he kept kind of looking down at my props, and kind of wanting to move them and scoot them and fuck with them. He was kind of just doing with his foot like the fuck. And finally, he picks up this car that had the ramp on it, and he holds it up like no one's laughing. He just holds it up and looks at the audience like, yeah, this. I came all the way down like for this, and he makes fun of it, which is weird because it killed.
Yeah.
And then he like threw it down. He didn't like lay it down. He kind of threw it down, and the crowd was like, "Ooh," because they really loved me. I was young. I was probably 19.
Yeah.
And I had just done three jokes, and then he went to the paper cups and string, and that was really killer. And he kind of went, "I don't get it, babe," or ever. And then the next thing I know, they start to boo him like
holy
don't
shit.
And he was like, yeah, because he was kicking my props, and the crowd was like, they're like, boo, and he's like, no, the topper, he called me, the topper's fine, the topper. So I come off, and I'm like, well, I was the pro, so I came off to say hi, and he wouldn't say hi, and he left. And about 10 years go by of him ripping on me in every show, and finally I'm here in LA, and I was staying at this hotel, and the elevator doors opened. And off I'm walking is this guy.
No.
And I said, "Oh my God, hey!"
Oh my
and he was
God.
Like, "Hey, Topper." And I said, "No, we have to have a talk."
Holy
and he's like,
shit.
"We do? Oh, this will be good." I said, "No, really. If you have just 5 minutes of your time, I need to talk to you." And he's like, "You got about five, okay, Topper? What is it?" I said, "I want to set the record straight. What happened?" He says, "I'll tell you before you tell me. We were at University of Georgia." I said, "Nope. We were at Wake Forest." "So you're already wrong. It's Wake Forest University." He's all right. "Now what happened?" "You went up and did 30 minutes. I said, "There you go." I did not. I did three props because I didn't even have 30 minutes. I did three props. I was supposed to do 20, 18 or something like that, but I did three. And he says, "Nope, you went long and the guy that booked, he was so mad." I said, "No, that's not what happened. I wasn't capable of going long."
Yeah.
"And I wouldn't do that to you. I'm scared to death to have the gig. I wouldn't have gone over my time. I was scared even I could get to the time."
Right.
And then you started kicking everything. He says, I didn't kick it, babe. I said, "Whatever you did, you made it bad for everybody. And you turn, and then, so you owe me an apology." And he said, I think he said, "Let me think on it, babe, okay?" And I swear to God, and then I left, and I was like, really? Okay. And it was David Spade one day, and David Spade knows this person real well, and he comes walking in the corner, and he says, "Hey." I said, "How do you know David?" I said, Well, David and I are friends. I said, David and I, you and I should be friends too. And I said, Dave, he's not my friend because he thinks that I went too long at he got the college wrong and the amount of time wrong that I did. And he thinks like that. And Dave says like, Carrot Top doesn't have 5 minutes. How could you think he would have, and he didn't even know me. He just said, how would Carrot Top didn't have 5 minutes? And I said, right. Not even now do I have 5 minutes. So finally, it was like a truce, I think. He said, all right, truce. And then I ended up going to a basketball game, a NBA basketball all-star game in Vegas. And they put me in these seats, and I had the best seats in the arena. I mean, literally, ESPN people were behind me. I kept, oh God, there's like ESPN guys. Yeah, and they're like, oh, sorry, I got, and then who comes and sits right behind me, my friend. And I said, this sucks, huh? And he said, it's okay, babe. I said, you know, I gotta know, is it that I'm sitting in front of you, make you more angry, or my hair, you can't see around it. And he said, no. It's that my son is your biggest fan. Would you mind taking a picture with him? And I said, your son is? And he goes, yeah. And I said, oh, my God. Now, that got to be the worst part, right? He says, just take the picture. I said, it's got to make your blood boil that your son loves me. He says, my son loves Carrot Top. So I said, okay. And I put my arm around him. I said, you know, your dad hated me for years. And he think the son is, you know, funny. He goes, my dad hates everybody. Dad hates me too. Don't, you know, get over it. But we finally made up.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was one of all those things, misunderstandings.
You know, Carrot, I agree. Psych, he is not here. This is the end of the main episode. If you want the full bonus, full extended episode, you can get that now at tmgstudios.tv. Yeah. No ads. What else can I tell you? And you'll get 90 minutes of me and Big CT, Big Carrot Top. Big thank you to Carrot Top. Big up Carrot Top. Big up tmgstudios.tv. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon. In it.
This week on the extended cut.
Some of the stories I've never told.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's great. That's awesome. I mean, ever. And it's fucking creepy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he comes running over. He's just, his hair's flopping. He says, you just got me fucking fired.
It's just a carrot.
It's a single carrot.
It's a carrot.
To watch this extended cut and more, sign up at tmgstudios.tv.